ever etched in my memory is the very day that 8 stars of the Alaska flag became the 49 star of the United States of America flag.
An emotional Bill Walker becomes Alaska's 11th governor. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 1st. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, an Anchorage proposal to ban the sale and cultivation of marijuana.
To me, this is just a wait-and-see approach. In no way is this advocating for a ban on personal use of marijuana at all.
Tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
It was a celebratory tone in Juneau today during the inauguration ceremony for Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. After opening songs by the Mount St. Elias dancers, David Katsik gave a traditional welcome that emphasized the unity campaign's theme.
Say it loud.
Proceed.
Say it like you mean it.
Proceed.
It means together, together, together. There's not a thing we cannot accomplish.
Both Walker and Mallott were sworn in, sharing a stage with outgoing Governor Sean Parnell, as well as U.S. Senator-elect Dan Sullivan. Dressed in traditional Tlingit regalia, Mallott's short address focused on political bipartisanship and cultural empowerment.
Whether we wear Carhartts, blue jeans, fancy suits, or silk ties, whether we fish, whether we work with our hands, we can empathize. We can know from Angoon to Anaktuvik Pass and Anchorage that we Alaskans can be one.
Mallott concluded with a call to rise as one, the motto at this year's Alaska Federation of Natives meeting. After thanking all those who helped his campaign, Governor Walker gave an emotional personal account of his own life. He says it mirrors the narrative of the state he now leads.
My family story is Alaska's story. You know, I remember my parents' efforts and advocacy for statehood. Forever etched in my memory is the very day that 8 stars of the Alaska flag became the 49 star of the United States of America flag.
Walker said inclusivity and transparency will be the hallmarks of his administration. He gave a general nod to expanding energy programs as the way to fix the state's troubled budget outlook.
Today, oil was hovering in the $70 range. We're heading for some lean times. There is no reason we cannot turn that around. We live in one of the most resource-rich states in the nation and one of the richest countries in the world. The key to every growing economy is low-cost energy. We don't have a resource problem in Alaska. We have a distribution problem.
Walker's address was light on specific policy points, although he pledged to immediately begin work to expand Medicaid coverage in Alaska. Later, he appointed Valerie Davidson as the new commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. Davidson championed Medicaid expansion in her former job with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Walker also named former Democratic legislator Sam Cotton as his acting commissioner of Fish and Game. Marty Rutherford, who held a post in the Department of Natural Resources during Sarah Palin's administration, will be rejoining the agency as a deputy commissioner. The municipality of Anchorage may use its leverage as the state's population center to influence how laws on commercial marijuana take shape in the year ahead. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes has more.
Anchorage Assemblymember Amy Dembowski is behind a proposed ordinance that would ban the sale and cultivation of marijuana in the city. Nationwide, pot is in legal limbo. Voters in states and cities are opting for legalization, but at the federal level, it's still a controlled substance. Those inconsistencies could get very tangled when it comes to entities like banks and highways, which operate locally but have federal standards. Like, say, if you use a federal highway to deposit cash you made selling commercial marijuana, are you or your bank breaking federal laws on money laundering and illegal transport? See how quickly this gets tricky? Dembowski believes it's prudent to let other communities in Alaska test the waters on commercialization first.
To me, this is just a wait-and-see approach. In no way is this advocating for a ban on personal use of marijuana at all. All I'm saying is before we get into a commercialized industry that's still federally illegal, we need to understand and make sure there's no federal impacts when it comes to millions of dollars of transportation dollars.
Because of its population, Anchorage is the largest potential market in the state for regulated marijuana, and Dembowski thinks leveraging that influence can help residents and the city set better terms in the implementation phase.
I think by opting out now, what it does is it gives the citizens of Anchorage the opportunity to really be a loud voice in the development of these regulations. I think you'll see the marijuana industry, I think you'll see the state regulators come to the city of Anchorage and say, what is it that you're concerned about as we move forward, and what is it that Anchorage needs in order to move forward with this potential industry.
But not everyone agrees that a local ban is a wise strategy. Proponents of the Ballot 2 initiative that passed this November say Dembowski's ordinance ignores the will of the majority of voters.
For the Anchorage Assembly to consider opting out now, we think is irresponsible and wildly premature.
Bruce Schulte is a spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. Given that under the state's timeline for implementation, it'll be another 15 months before commercial terms are set and permits accepted, no one knows yet what the rules will look like.
Those governing bodies have no more information to work from now than the voters did on November 4th.
Schulte and his organization are not pushing for every community in the state to allow pot. He says Ballot Measure 2 specifically includes the option for local bans, the same way many communities across Alaska have voted to go dry or damp. But Schulte says what's at stake is making an informed decision on what exactly is being banned and what wait and see actually means.
Local communities have the option to opt out, and it's expected that some will. You know, if they feel that marijuana is overly burdensome, well, they have that right, as does the municipality of Anchorage. We just feel that it's irresponsible to do so now. We think that the prudent thing to do is to wait and see what the statewide regulations will look like before making that determination.
Dembowski's ordinance, which is co-sponsored by Assemblymember Dick Traney, will have a public hearing during the Assembly's regular meeting on December 16th. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Municipal leaders beyond Anchorage also have a lot of questions about the new state marijuana law. They got answers to some of their questions last month in an Alaska Municipal League session in Anchorage. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Attorney Matt Singer says he's been getting a lot of questions from local government officials about the new pot legalization law. Alaska Native leaders weren't happy to hear Singer's answer to a question on whether communities can ban the personal use of pot.
So you cannot declare a dry village the way you can with alcohol.
North Slope Borough Assemblyman Forrest Oliman said after the session that he and most other Native leaders oppose the law because of the damage substance abuse has inflicted on Indigenous peoples.
For many years, we've been dealing with the social aspects of alcohol and drug abuse. And my concern with the legalization of marijuana may lead to more use, more abuse.
North Slope Mayor Charlotte Brower says legalized pot could jeopardize the borough's efforts to keep young people away from drugs so they can qualify for good-paying jobs with industries that prohibit their use. She says the borough will continue to drug test its employees and maintain a drug-free workplace.
We will continue to do that until we are forced in courts that we are doing something illegal.
Singer told the municipal leaders that nothing in the new law will change drug-free workplace policies, but he said both public and private employers will have to make it clear to workers that the new law does not exempt them from such policies. Oliman says he's also concerned that the $50 per ounce excise tax that the new law requires to be levied on the sale of pot will not raise enough money to pay for increased drug treatment and rehabilitation that he believes will be needed. Singer says municipal officials should be talking about that with their legislators, who can increase that tax and make other changes in the law.
Any ballot initiative can be amended by the legislature immediately. So the legislature could start tinkering with this as soon as it goes into session. and the legislature has the right to repeal or vacate a ballot initiative after 2 years.
Singer said afterward that the new law raises many questions that will have to be answered by the courts.
Ballot Measure 2 marks a major change in Alaska law, and anytime there's a change, it creates uncertainty. And so I expect there'll be litigation and disputes.
Singer says litigation may delay the part of the law dealing with the production and sale of marijuana. He says the part of the law allowing personal use will go into effect by March 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Ellis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the effort to preserve one of the Matsu Valley's iconic summits.
You can see the Kinnick Glacier, the Matanuska River, downtown Palmer, Kinnick Arm. It's spectacular, and it's really accessible for almost everyone.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is conducting a test fishery for walleye pollock using seine gear that starts today and runs through February. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Bycatch is always a concern.
It is the highest priority for us to not catch king salmon.
Fish and Game groundfish management biologist Jan Rumble says because seining for pollock hasn't been done here before, extra precautions are in place to make sure it's done right.
We will have observers on every trip that goes out to go try to catch pollock with seines. There will be one of our observers on board to monitor what is coming up in the net besides pollock, and then figure out if there's too many king salmon coming up in the nets. You know, there's a large possibility that we will stop this experiment immediately.
But if things do go right, the test fishery will run for about 3 months. Then the results of the experiment will likely go before the Board of Fish for review in March 2015. According to the ADF&G release, one main purpose is simple: to test the effectiveness of using purse seine gear to fish for pollock instead of the typical trawling. But Rumble says this is also one step in a larger effort to evaluate the viability of adopting a state guideline harvest level pollock fishery in the Gulf of Alaska.
People are interested in having state water fisheries so that we can still maintain, you know, smaller fleets of people who have access to fisheries without having permits.
As the federal pollock fishery goes to a catch shares program, Rumble says there's been interest among fishermen to see more state waters open up.
There's a big push with fishermen to have some fisheries that are not already spoken for, that you can enter as a young fisherman. You know, you don't have to buy a permit. You can, you know, just sign up and try out this fishery and see if you're good at it, see if you can make it, you know, make part of a living doing it.
That's been some of the feedback garnered at meetings of the Gulf of Alaska Pollock Work Group. According to Rumble, in the last meeting cycle, there was a proposal before the Board of Fish to establish a state waters pollock fishery management plan. Rather than take action on it, it formed the working group. It's made up of federal fisheries managers, ADF&G representatives, fishermen in existing pollock fisheries, mostly trawlers, and fishermen interested in developing fisheries, mostly jig and seine. And it's taking a look at how a state GHL fishery would maximize the use of Gulf of Alaska pollock resources while maintaining environmental protections. Rumble says after a meeting earlier this year, Kodiak's ADF&G biologists sought out fishermen for test seine and jig fisheries. There was a lot of initial interest, but when it came time to assign commissioners' permits, no one showed up. And Rumble says she understands why.
You know, it's a risk, right? What if they don't catch anything? I mean, they're probably going to invest some gas and some time and money in their nets to do this fishery. And if they come out and they don't make any money, you know, it's a little bit of a risk.
So now biologists are trying again in Cook Inlet. They've already got a number of fishermen signed up. Rumble says it's a reflection of changing times in this area.
You know, 20 years ago, we had a big shellfish fishery here for tanner crab. for Dungeness, for shrimp. And basically there's been a switch from that kind of shellfish to Pacific cod and pollock. And so people will tell you, if you interviewed a fisherman right now, even the sport fishermen, they would tell you that there's tons of pollock in this bay.
The harvest limit comprises some of the quota left over from the federal fishery. 220,000 pounds are available before December 31st, then another 220,000 are available until February 28th. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The city and borough of Wrangell and the Wrangell Medical Center recently closed a settlement with a company formerly contracted to help finance a new hospital building. After the hospital project stalled in 2012 with more than $1 million spent on contracts, city and hospital officials are hoping for a fresh start. KSDK's Katarina Sustarak reports.
Wrangell Borough Assembly and Wrangell Medical Center board members approved the settlement with Innovative Capital at a special executive session, a closed-door meeting. Wrangell Borough Manager Jeff J. Bush says the settlement allowed both parties to walk away from the agreement.
The monies that we'd already paid to Innovative Capital, they were allowed to keep those, but we didn't have to pay any additional funds, or there was no money exchanged hands at all with the settlement. So that was important to us.
Jay Bush says Innovative Capital was paid about $900,000 to help finance the hospital project. The company secured a $24 million loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for hospital construction due to start in 2011, but the loan wasn't used and it's no longer valid. Jay Bush says an additional $600,000 was paid to American Health Facilities Development for bid coordination services. That brings the total spent on contracts for the original hospital project to at least $1.5 million.
So that, and there was two construction contracts that we just basically received letters, and if we didn't take any action, there was nothing really we paid them. The only ones we paid were the one you just talked about and Innovative Capital.
And is any of the work from those two contracts applicable to what's being worked on now?
Probably not.
But Jay Bush says some of the work done by Innovative Capital to get the USDA loan could speed up the intense process of applying for a new loan in the future. The contracts for $1.5 million were a source of controversy in 2012. Petitioners cited the contracts as one of three reasons for a hospital board recall election that year. They alleged the board violated Wrangell's municipal code by authorizing the former hospital CEO to enter two contracts for a borough-owned building. Wrangell officials declined to comment on the legitimacy of those contracts because of a settlement with the former CEO. Wrangell Medical Center CEO Marla Sanger says the settlement with Innovative Capital allows more flexibility in decision-making for the hospital project.
It just seemed like it was time to start fresh and think about what kinds of financial services would we need now going forward, because things have changed, and it might be something completely different. So now we have that option.
Sanger says she's trying to secure pre-development help for the hospital project. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katarina Sestarek.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough Planning Commission will hear public comment tonight on a proposal to locate a new landfill in the Palmer area. Central Monofill Services has requested a permit for a so-called monofill to be used for construction debris only. It is Central Monofill's second request for a permit. A year ago, the Matsu Borough Planning Commission turned down the company's application. Palmer resident Stephanie Nowers says the landfill permit is not a good idea. Nowers says toxins such as benzene and arsenic can leak out of landfills and could threaten local water sources.
And what we're seeing in this proposal is not any sort of recognition of those impacts or the near source of water on this property. There's an aquifer that feeds our area wells and water. And so we're really concerned about this material getting in to our water, and we're not seeing any protections on the part of this company in terms of a liner or a real groundwater monitoring plan.
The proposed debris dump is in a gravel pit near the Glen Highway. Central Monofil owner Shane Durand did not return calls for comment. In 2013, Central Monofil was issued 3 citations by the Matsu Borough for illegally dumping debris in the gravel pit, for operating without a permit, and for creating a public nuisance. But John Klapperick, chair of the borough's planning commission, says the company has been working with the borough since then on a new application.
And this is a resolution that has never been brought before us. So anything in the past is not part of this application this evening.
The public hearing is set for 6 p.m. at the Matsu Borough Chambers. Baby boomers know that avoiding tobacco use and watching their weight, exercising, and staying mentally active contribute to longer life. But as KNBA's Jacqueline Estes reports, researchers recently announced findings that show there may be a downside to living longer.
At the Gerontological Society of America annual science meeting, held in October this year in Washington, D.C., people who study aging share their research results, including studies on the potential implications of the large number of baby boomers entering their 60s and 70s. In gerontological circles, it's well established that life expectancy is linked to higher incomes, more years of education, and access to medical care, as well as good health habits. But at this year's conference, Dr. Carol Jagger of Newcastle University in England summarized studies in England, Australia, and the southern United States that all showed the same unexpected results.
Education will have its cost. That the cost is that you will live longer, but as you live longer, some things will happen that are somewhat negative. So it's a kind of interesting twist on what we usually think.
Dr. Sarah Leditka of the University of North Carolina says her team's research shows longer lifespans gave people more time to develop memory or judgment problems.
For people with cognitive impairment, those with more education lived substantially and significantly longer than those with less education.
The risk of dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, increases with age. About 14% of people age 71 and up have cognitive impairment, compared to 37% of people age 90 and up. Leditka says life expectancy has increased, but she says the age of onset of cognitive impairment has not changed.
People overall with cognitive impairment lived much longer, had much longer life expectancies than those without cognitive impairment, which, although may not seem intuitive, was actually not surprising, because dementia increases. You have to be, in many instances, you have to be older to have dementia.
The Alzheimer's Association predicts the number of people aged 65 and up with Alzheimer's will almost double in Alaska by 2050. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
A group of Alaskans is trying to buy the landmark butte in the Matsu Valley. A nonprofit is looking for donations to make sure the summit of the popular hike is protected from development. And as APRN's Dave Waldron reports, the fact that it's even for sale is news to most.
Kim Solian is the Matsu Program Director for Great Land Trust, a conservation group. She said they didn't realize the butte was privately owned until just this year.
And so we're like, wow. That's a surprise. We thought that was already public because the Matsu Borough maintains a trail to the top.
The borough does own part of the butte, but not the top of it. The summit is owned by the Mental Health Trust.
So there's a mixture of landowners. The Matsu Borough has about 80 acres on the northwest side. And then a couple other farmers, like the Reindeer Farm, has a good portion of the one side of the butte. And then a couple other private landowners have another side. So it's a mix.
Great Land Trust is only interested in preserving the top of the butte. If they're able to raise the money to purchase it, they'll create a conservation easement on it, protecting it from future development.
Even though the top of the butte, the summit, is the destination for hundreds and hundreds of hikers every year, it could, because it's owned by a private entity, it isn't protected, it doesn't have a conservation easement on it, it could be developed as a cell tower farm. Or maybe at some point it's feasible to mine it for granite and sell that for who knows what.
Although Great Land Trust is responsible for the fundraising, the campaign has drawn in some private citizens, including Dan McDonough, a resident of Butte and creator of the Facebook page I Helped Buy the Butte. McDonough says he's hiked the Butte hundreds of times.
I've hiked it at midnight to look at the northern lights and the northern lights of Nova Palmer. I've hiked it during the lunar eclipse and early in the morning for sunrises. And we've brought Santa Claus up there and taken pictures of Santa up there with a tree. And it's definitely seems to be a center point of activity for us.
McDonough even started a weekly Butte hike. He says his group's been meeting up every Monday morning for more than a year now. He started the group after realizing how many people he knew had just given up on hiking.
A lot of people that have done it and started doing it are people that have gotten away a little bit from the outdoors. That they did it when they were younger, and then they let a bunch of time lapse. And now that they're older and all that time and I'm out of shape and it's going to take me forever and I can't do it. And it seems to be those type of people that show up, and after they've done it a couple times, they're hooked.
McDonough says that's what makes the Butte so special. Just about anyone can do it, and the payoff at the top is well worth the hike. And Kim Solian with Great Land Trust couldn't agree more.
The Butte hike is iconic. You can see the Kinnick Glacier, the Matanuska River, downtown Palmer, the farms, Kinnick Arm, Pioneer Peak. It's spectacular, and it's really accessible for almost everyone. And so we would really love to have everyone who loves the Butte, who has hiked the Butte, to join us in helping buy the Butte so it can be protected forever.
Solian says they've raised roughly half of the $180,000 needed to buy the summit. For APRN, I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Tim Ellis, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Katerina Sostarek in Wrangell. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. Winter is a time to focus on home and family, a time for eating good food and telling stories. This season, the Salmon Project is thankful to be sharing Alaskan salmon stories from around the state. The Salmon Project celebrates Alaskans' deep personal relationships with salmon as food, a source of pride, a way of life, and as the focus of a lot of fun. To read Alaskan stories or share your own, visit salmonproject.org/story. Salmon, it runs deep in all of us. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. You've heard of Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. Well, now you're hearing about Giving Tuesday, a day to kick off the season of giving back on Tuesday, December the 2nd. Celebrate the season of giving with Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Community Foundation on Tuesday, December the 2nd by giving a gift to the cause you care about most. When you live and give in Alaska, you make a real difference in your home community.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.